Well, Dr. Ford St. Hill, I also want to ask you about persons with disabilities and also making that adjustment to living, or as some people have acquired a disability. That too can be very stressful. What are some techniques that you can suggest that will help these individuals to adjust to their disabilities and become more comfortable with it?
Okay. This is not a difficult question, but a question that we can tackle from many different ends. If we speak about the persons who were born with a disability, that's something that we call congenital. So whether it is a physical deformity, you know, your limbs are a little different in appearance and you're not able to use one hand because of changes in the fingers or something like that, or a problem with your legs, or you were born with deficits in hearing or sight or anything like that. So let's talk about the congenital ones. Those persons are usually, once they have a supportive home environment and community, are able to live with being different a little easier than somebody with an acquired disability later in life, because they would have learned how to adapt. And of course, it depends on how severe the disability is as well. How to adapt and how to live every day. Now, why I say that once they have a supportive family and environment is because there has been a culture regionally, definitely locally, to try to limit persons with disabilities. And while they may have to do things differently, they don't always need, yes, we protect them because you should protect any of your loved ones, right? But you still have to allow them to live. And we, especially locally, I find that we limit persons with disabilities. Even if the disability is an intellectual one, we try to shield them. Now things are getting a little better because we actually have special education schools and that sort of stuff. But before, you would have relatives who they wouldn't try to push with their relative or child who has a disability to continue school, wouldn't allow them to try to seek employment, doesn't let them socialize, and always make them feel like they can't, they don't empower them to be able to push through, right? So then those persons end up, some of them, actually very stunted, not just in terms of the physical stuff, but emotionally. They don't have the social interaction. Some persons don't really know how to function in certain social situations because they're not allowed to do it. And then what worries me a lot of the times is that sometimes their parents have shielded them and kept them so close for so long that then when the parents pass away, then it's like their entire world crashes because siblings might not want to be bothered. That's just the reality. There may not be any other siblings. There may not be any aunts or uncles or anybody, any other relatives. And this could result in any person feeling depressed or acting out or having behavioral issues or having to be institutionalized because there's nobody there to take care of them and they were never shown or allowed to take care of themselves. Now, persons who become disabled later on in life, whether that is as a child or as an adult. So, you know, it could have been an accident, a fall, a motor vehicle accident, loss of a limb, paralysis as a result of an illness, an infection, anything, you name it. It becomes a little more difficult for some of these persons because obviously they would have known life functioning in a different capacity and functioning differently. And now all of a sudden you don't have use of, you know, you may have had a stroke. You don't have use of one side of your body, or you don't have use of one hand. You may not be able to see, and you know what it's like to have sight. You can't hear all of a sudden, and you knew what it was like to hear before. So this can definitely result in adjustment disorders, some of them which can be transient or temporary, but it can be more severe. So depression and anxiety and mood disorders, and then they start to limit their own lives. And again, it helps if you have supportive family and friends and communities who will not tease you or belittle you or insult you for both congenital and acquired, and support you, help to uplift you, try to get you, not necessarily treating you differently helps. Obviously, there will be things that are different. If you can't walk on your own, you have to use a wheelchair, you have to make accommodations for that person. So yes, you do things to assist them, but not making them feel like less than a person or less than a human being. No, because they're differently abled now. They have loss of function of parts of their body. What I tell persons is that today, them, tomorrow, you. Today, me, tomorrow, you. We don't know, because you're living your life today as you know it, perfectly normal. And then you get in a motor vehicle accident and you're paralyzed from the neck down. Did you plan for that? No. Did you expect it? No. But you don't expect to be treated badly, mistreated. You expect to be cared for and assisted. So treat persons how you would like to be treated. So the important things for me are to show compassion, treat everyone respectfully. And in addition to that, empower them and strengthen and support them. Those are the things that are important.
Dr. Forrest-St. Hill, one of the points that you just raised, which I think is pretty important for us to have a national conversation on, is how do we treat individuals, as you said, whose parents die and there may be no siblings, no relatives or friends that will be willing to care for them. And then they are placed in the psychiatric hospital. We within the disabled community have been discussing this point for years, and it's really concerning. What would be some suggestions that you can offer so that we can help to address the situation in a very meaningful way?
This is a real concern for us at the psychiatric hospital as well. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because sometimes we are admitting persons for social reasons, and you should not be admitted into a psychiatric hospital for long-term care because of a social reason. It starts, as I said, from when the person is small, at least from birth. It's important that parents of children with disabilities understand that they're not always going to be here, and you need to make provisions for when or if you pass before your child with a disability. And that may be an adult child, adult as opposed to a child, because they always think of them as my baby, right? It would be good if we could do more education of the parents. It is good that we have these special education schools now, and schools for children with disabilities, so that they learn skills from early, so that they can at least be able to support themselves in some form or fashion, right? So that even if they're still institutionalized, there's still some ability for them to earn income, right? What would be ideal is if we had halfway houses or group homes set up for persons with disabilities, even if their parents are still alive, because some of them would love to move out from by their parents even before they pass away, and learn to live with persons who are having similar experiences as them, and they can support each other. They can go out, even if it's not full-time job, part-time job, and still come back and be able to cook and wash and, you know, whatever they're physically able to do for themselves. Different levels of group homes, so some with more supervision, some with less supervision. But honestly, a psychiatric hospital is definitely not where they belong. Unless, of course, there is a mental health issue that warrants them being admitted into the hospital.
Well, I quite agree with what you're saying, because I think we do need some halfway houses for the support of individuals with disabilities, because it's really troublesome to see so many individuals being placed within not only the psychiatric hospital, but the geriatric hospitals as well. Young people, and you know, this is heart-wrenching. Okay, so let's look at the matter of constantly readjusting to living with either an impairment, a health issue, or a disability that's degenerating. Because again, that takes some adjusting in lifestyle, in your whole mental attitude. Again, how can we work on this to really strengthen our own attitudes?
There are a few things that I would like to happen in terms of early intervention. So let me use the example of someone who's diagnosed with diabetes, right? This is a gentleman in his 40s, goes to the doctor, sky high blood sugar, placed on medication, told to watch his sugar, and told to come back in 2 months. What really should happen, right? Because that's what happens quite often. What really should happen is there's support that should start from there in terms of the education about the illness. So the education about whatever disorder is that a person has. So education about their illness or disability. Discussion about the lifestyle changes and how to prevent complications to prevent some disabilities. So if you educate someone who's been diagnosed with diabetes about proper nutrition, not about a diet, because the word diet has a negative connotation for everybody. It's restrictive and temporary most of the time, right? And we're only thinking about weight loss, but we're talking about nutrition plan, a healthy eating plan, how to manage your sugars, how to monitor them. Talking about exercise, prevention of the complications. Discuss the long-term complications of diabetes. Everybody only thinks about amputations. They think about literally somebody who's had their foot cut off from the knee down, but they don't think about even just the disability of having to have two toes removed or have loss of sensation in the limb because the nerves are affected, difficulty walking because of that. Losing your sight because of diabetic neuropathy and stuff like that. Those are not the things that are discussed. So you try to talk about these things from earlier and educate so that we can try to prevent them. Because when it happens, the lack of knowledge and the supposed sudden nature, even though it wasn't sudden, but because of lack of information, it feels sudden to the person, can actually be devastating. So the other thing that is important, I believe, as well, is discussing how being diagnosed affects with different illnesses affects you mentally. We might think, oh, the person is doing okay when he or she comes to see me. They're all right. You know, they're taking their medication and whatever. Or you see somebody who's not taking their medication as they should. And the first thing we want to do is to quarrel with them and tell them, well, you need to take your medication before you get your leg cut off. No, that's not what they want to hear. It is difficult having to take any medication for the rest of your life. It doesn't matter what it is. Nobody likes taking medication every day. So sometimes people just feel frustrated and down about that. And we need to make interventions early where that is concerned and support them. Stress the importance of taking it. You know, show some compassion. We understand it's difficult. You don't want to have to take medication all the time for this. Taking medication every day, sticking yourself every day to get the blood sugar or to take the insulin. We understand, but it's important because we don't want you to get any worse. And you keep talking about the possible complications and stuff. And it's similarly for any other disability or any other illness, because persons only think about major illnesses. You know, when people think about your mental health being affected, are you feeling depressed or down or having changes in your mood because of an illness? They're thinking about devastating things like cancer or something like multiple sclerosis or, you know, something like that. Something where you're paralyzed or you think you are, or your prognosis is poor and your lifespan may be shortened. But even the illnesses that you can, or disabilities that you can live with long term, you can have negative effects on your mental health when you're not referred appropriately, or at least your mental health is not even discussed with you. Because we ask, oh, how are you doing, as a reflex. It's just a normal thing. It's a routine. But not really stopping to ask, how are you really doing? How are things in your marriage? How are things with the children at home? How's the family adjusting to you having a disability? How are they feeling about it? Because all of that weighs on the person as well. They may have been a breadwinner. All of a sudden, no, they had to depend on their spouse or depend on their children to support them when they were supporting themselves before, and that sort of thing. So all these things need to be taken into consideration, and everybody that has interaction with the individual, so whether that is their general practitioner, the nurse at the clinic, the social worker, their pastor, neighbor, everybody, at some point, you know, checking in is what's important. And when you realize that this person, you know, they're not really themselves, they're not doing as well as they could mentally, trying to get help for them. And getting help might just be a counselor or a couple sessions with your pastor, if you, you know, you trust to speak to them, just to sometimes to vent, to discuss your frustrations. It may get to the point where you actually need to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And if that is the case, that is okay. You know, give yourself some, we always show compassion to others, but we don't show a lot of compassion to ourselves. Allow yourself the self-compassion. Changes in your life, major changes like being diagnosed with a terminal illness or a debilitating illness that's going to affect your functioning physically, is hard. And we have to appreciate that and support persons who are going through that. And it's not just the psychologist and the psychiatrist, it's everybody.
All right. So Dr. Ford, St. Hill, our time has caught up with us. It crept up on us because we were having such a really good conversation. I will definitely have to invite you back to share some more about our mental health and well-being, because I think it's critical, particularly in this period that we're experiencing so many national and global issues that are impacting our lives one way or the other.
Thank you for having me. And I will be very happy to continue the discussion at another time.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudeni Wickham-Ashby, and my special guest today, Dr. Ford St. Hill, a psychiatrist, as we examined the issues that are impacting our mental health and well-being. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300 and by email at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That's VISIONSBARBADOS, the @ gmail.com. And you can go to the VOB929.com website and listen to this and past episodes. So until next week, do take excellent care of yourself, love your neighbors, and be productive. Stay safe.